Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Viennese Coffee, Pastries, and Trade Talks.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland. President Bush meets with European Union leaders in Vienna today for a biannual summit. No doubt we'll hear pledges of transatlantic cooperation. And the leaders will sign some agreements on saving energy and fighting counterfeiters. But John Dimsdale reports the talks are expected to fall short on resolving the big trade issues.
Time is short for getting a global agreement on reducing barriers to trade in agriculture and manufactured products. Congress's grant of so-called fast-track authority for the president to close international trade deals is running out, and differences between the U.S. and Europe over domestic subsidies and tariff protections for farmers haven't budged in 3 years.
We say Europe hasn't gone far enough, and they say we have not gone far enough.
Gary Huffbauer is with the Institute for International Economics. He, like many other trade analysts, is not expecting any breakthroughs today. And he says even if the U.S. and EU find common ground, globalization is making trade deals more complex.
We still have many other important players, India, China, Brazil, South Africa, who have to come to the party or there will not be a party.
Trade ministers from around the world meet at the end of the month in a last-ditch effort to apply some deadline pressure to the global stalemate. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
All the news that's fit to print on a smaller page. The executive editor of the New York Times says the old gray lady may shrink to save money on newsprint. Bill Keller told employees that the paper will also start allowing advertising on the front page of its business section. Other newspapers, including the Wall Street Journal and USA Today, have made similar cost-cutting moves as ad revenues decline. Transistors and chips are the building blocks of processors found in everything from your cell phone to your digital music player. IBM won a victory yesterday in the war to make them smaller and faster, but it can't afford to rest. Janet Babin reports from the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
IBM officials say they've created the world's fastest silicon chip. It runs 100 times faster than the chips we use now, but it probably won't hold the record for very long. Most experts believe chips will get smaller and speedier for another 5 years, and then...
Right now, nobody knows.
Michael Canellos is an editor at CNETNews.com.
People expect to be able to keep shrinking transistors and keep making smaller and more powerful chips, but frankly, they don't know how they're going to do it. They're really going to have to get creative at that point.
By using uber-tiny carbon nanotubes or other new materials in place of the old silicon transistor standby. Canellos expects Texas Instruments, Intel, Advanced Micro Devices, and Samsung to challenge IBM's chip in coming months. And accomplishments in the lab will eventually filter down to consumers. Picture a cell phone that lets you watch TV and hold a video conference at the same time. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The Wall Street Journal reports this morning that Anheuser-Busch may be hitting the hard stuff soon. Beer has lost 5% of its market share to wine and spirits over the last decade. The brewer is already test marketing a liqueur called Jekyll and Hyde. Not a whole lot of movement on Wall Street yesterday. Positive news from the housing sector helped send blue chips higher, up 34 points to 10,974. The NASDAQ lost 3 points to finish at 2107. And the S&P was flat for the day, ending at 1240. This is Marketplace. He may be over the hill, but he's back on the mound. Newly unretired pitching ace Roger Clemens is back playing for the Astros. He's scheduled to toss against the Minnesota Twins tomorrow. Clemens' return wasn't cheap, but as Ethan Lindsay reports, the team is still likely to profit.
Roger Clemens can still throw a baseball 90 miles per hour, but he's 43 years old, and that's an age when most players have hung up their cleats. So instead of signing a long-term deal this time, Clemens inked a $12 million contract to pitch half a season. Don't expect to see other retired hurlers follow his lead, though, says writer Derek Jocks with Baseball Prospectus.
Roger Clemens is a unique player. It's a bit comparable to what happened with Michael Jordan after his retirement.
For the Astros, the investment is likely a good one, too. Last year, about 3,000 more fans showed up at the ballpark when Clemens pitched. And if he rockets them to the World Series, like he did last year, the team will more than recoup his part-time salary. I'm Ethan Lindsay for Marketplace.
This is American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com, where you can choose from up to four customized loan offers. 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win. LendingTree.com. By SHRM's new book, The New American Workplace, presenting a look at the hot-button issues that define work in the U.S. More at shrm.org. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Tess Viglund. Will they or won't they? That is the question when it comes to whether or not the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates yet again. The Fed meets next week and is expected to hike the benchmark federal funds rate for the 17th time in a row, mostly on inflation worries. Marketplace commentator and former Labor Secretary Robert Reich says there is something to fret over, but it is not inflation.
Ben Bernanke and his Federal Reserve remember the double-digit inflation of the 1970s and are determined to mount a preemptive strike. They don't have a direct memory of the trauma that haunted the previous generation, the Depression of the 1930s. Each generation, in its determination to avoid the nightmare it does remember, runs the danger of overreacting. A generation ago, they paid too little attention to inflationary forces. So Paul Volcker, who was then Fed chairman, had to break the back of inflation and thereby put the economy into a severe recession. Now Bernanke and company are paying too little attention to deflationary forces building in America and the global economy. Today's economy is not at all like the overheated economy of the 1970s. Labor unions don't have nearly the power they did then to get wage increases. Big companies don't have nearly the power they did then to raise prices. What's more, productivity has been soaring over the last 5 years, while the median wage has been stuck in the mud. Wages, remember, constitute about 70% of the cost of doing business. So how can price pressures be building? The price increases we're now witnessing are not due to excess demand and limited productive capacity, which cause inflation. They come from soaring energy and raw material costs, which are based on expectations of future price increases. In other words, there's a lot of speculation going on in global commodity markets, and such bubbles can burst anytime. Meanwhile, the global market is glutted with productive capacity, not only in America. Look at China. If anything, there's too much capacity relative to demand, which is a recipe for deflation. Prices can begin to drop because buyers hold off, expecting further price decreases. It happened in Japan in the 1990s. It's already starting to happen in certain housing markets in the United States that had been red hot but are now cooling so fast home prices are dropping. Deflation is also often accompanied by stagnant or falling wages, which make it harder for consumers to afford to buy. Look what's been happening to American wages. The Fed and other central bankers around the world are raising interest rates because they're fighting the last war. But they already won that war. Inflation is no longer our biggest threat. They ought to be worrying about the war before the last one and the specter of deflation. They're in danger of losing that war even before they know they're in it.
Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. And I'm Tess Viglund. Thanks for being with us.
American Public Media.
Men have always outnumbered women in the tech sector.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.